Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I am your host, Alex Schumacher. Food. We need it for survival. But more and more, there's a bit of mystery as to where our food actually comes from and what's in it. Whether it's fast food or something that's highly processed, we often find ourselves wondering, what did I just eat? Like, actually eat. That's why this week our reporters have kicked open the kitchen door and are taking you with them. From elaborate meals to fresh produce, we've got all that and more coming up on this episode of Real College Podcast. Let me ask you this. Is there anything better than cooking shows? I mean, there's just something so addictive about watching super talented people make complex dishes like it's nothing. Now, while most of us don't necessarily associate fancy meals with the college experience, there is an underground group here at the University of Minnesota that aims to change that. Nathan Fervoy takes us into the kitchen with a pair of student chefs who offer fancy multi-course meals at an affordable price.
I've done
Mid-April, the heart of Minnesota winter, as a blizzard swirled and cars spun helplessly outside, we sat in a warm kitchen with food and conversation all around. Kitch is a pop-up restaurant run by University of Minnesota students preparing extraordinary multi-course meals for an affordable price.
I'm Connor O'Brien, and I cook food semi-legally.
I'm Evan, and I cook semi-legally too.
After attending the very first Kitch, I became a big fan and was lucky enough to be invited to a test kitchen on this cold April night.
Okay. Yeah, could you describe what we're making right now?
Well, seeing as we're snowed in, this is the classic kind of chef's dilemma of open up the cupboard and see what's in there. And we actually had a bunch of giant cans of tomatoes that we used as decor for our last kitch. So we cracked one of those bad boys open. We're going to make a metric hecton of red sauce tonight. With some kind of special pasta that Evan picked up in Italy. Not Italy, Italy.
Italy.
Yeah.
The one in Chicago? Oh, I've been there.
Place is tight.
Place is,
I was down there.
Yeah, so we've just got a bunch of booze and we're snowed in, which is the ideal situation.
Babu.
Yeah, so those are another pasta that we have today is some like fire roasted. How the f*** do they get the fire flavor in there?
So it's the ash. They just burn the wheat when they're making it to some degree. Like it comes from, I think I was read it that it comes from back in like Roman times, somewhere around then. Like peasants would like. They would burn the wheat fields after like harvest and stuff, so it was fertile like for next year. But they're just like peasants that like, hey, you can have grab whatever is like left after they burned everything down, and so they just turn that into wheat. Made pasta out of it.
Yeah. So right now we've got some orecchietti, which is just a pasta that looks like a ear. It means ear. It's basically just like a hemisphere of pasta. Anyway, I'm wrist deep in some tomatoes right now. I'm just kind of crushing them up by hand. It's better to crush tomatoes by hand and kind of minimize their contact with metal as much as possible. Because as soon as tomatoes start to touch metal, they start to oxidize. And you get like that, you know, that bitter tomato flavor that you get in like kind of shitty cafeteria red sauce. That's what that comes from.
Okay, Comstock.
Comstock. So right now I'm just crushing and mincing some garlic. Garlic is, I mean, do I need to tell you about garlic? Garlic's a great aromatic. Fucking could eat a clove of this stuff. I'm so sorry if the FCC comes down on you because of my language. Listen, I've got an image to maintain of like this punk rock chef.
You have to do one less pass through.
Furthermore, then it only means it's all in one kind of level. So you crush it to the thickness that you want, then you run through. Otherwise, you'd have to slice it long ways, slice it into baton it, and then it's across. Okay. I'll just do the rest of the head. While we're waiting for are you cooking the pasta?
Yep.
Yeah, explain what's going on over here.
Oh, you're boiling pasta?
I
was just boiling the pasta. Keep on checking it, just want it al dente.
Most recipes that you see that call for like garlic and onions and carrots and stuff have you cook it at the start. Kind of release a lot of the aromats that are actual chemicals that are flavors.
Or that enhance flavors.
Being the fact that like I want to start learning about doing cocktails, but the fact that like I'm broke.
Yeah.
And there's like no good like liquor store nearby.
Yeah, I just realized we're like for my first interview, first thing I ever made.
What is the first thing you ever cooked?
Like red sauce.
What's your origins?
My origins?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess this is how it's happening. I don't know. I started cooking. Mind if we do it by the stove?
Yeah, go.
This wasn't for any like deep audio reason. I just need to stir this on. I don't know. I started cooking pretty young, actually. I don't know, like 9. I started, 8 or 9. Just helping my mom in the kitchen. I felt bad just kind of like sitting around. I was like that dutiful like Boy Scout-ass kid. And I was like, all right, mom, I'll help you in the kitchen. Like, I would just at first just kind of like dump things in when she needed me to or stir some pasta. But like eventually I started kind of like taking more of a role in like the making of it, because every red sauce should be made bespoke. Like every red sauce should be a freestyle endeavor. So I tell her how much and what spices to add sometimes, and then like eventually my mom was like, all right, make me your red sauce, when I was like 12, I think. I made a red sauce for that night. Eventually it kind of became, I don't know, something that I did with my mom. My dad was never a really big part of my life, and like my dad wasn't that great, so I would use the time that I had with my mom to kind of cook and kind of celebrate being with her. I don't know. It's always been something that I did to be close to people, and now it's a way I can like kind of show off and show people I care about them.
Yeah.
That was way sappier than I thought it would be when I started.
That's like the con. That's the content.
That's that content.
Soda, but
yo, write it out.
Yeah.
What's a good cocktail?
Sure. So it's lavender soda, a little bit of lemon juice, and some honey.
Lunch.
It's good.
This is a good lunch. I think I put too much.
What?
Like, I just want to do like a little sample.
You just get the sound of him sipping? Hell yeah.
It's good. You can really, the lavender, I think, balances with the honey nicely, and it's not overpowering, but you still get a little bit of the gin flavor.
It was kind of sweet, and then had a very tart aftertaste.
I actually didn't start cooking until, like, sophomore year, like, a year and a half ago. And then, actually, so, I didn't start cooking until I got my apartment. And then, Connor was over. I think this is how Kitch started. It was like a Friday or something.
That was Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, it was at Dungeons and Dragons. And like I was like, hey, wanna like just host a restaurant in this apartment? But yeah, I haven't done cooking since like before that. I was like it's I like doing creative things, I like just doing things. And so I was like, I'll just try cooking and then just hosting. And like one big part of it is like I really got excited just for making posters for each one, and it's like Connor kind of, like, the early ones, Connor just kind of led the way. Because, you know, like, he's been cooking all his life, and then, like, I try to focus on, like, doing something that I can actually work on. It's, like, trying to make a menu, like, around ideas that I can, like, try to conceptualize a lot better than flavors.
Right.
And so I'd, like, do that. And, yeah, it's definitely nice that now that I can, like, think in flavors and, like, oh, this is what this needs. And, like, that actually comes by a lot quick, easier. Like, you just need to, like, have, like, pay attention to your food and, like, you can understand, like, hey, this is what this needs. Like, something creamy or something sweet to kind of finish off the taste. Or Connor, what was the thing with chicken hearts that we were going to do?
Chicken heart on Tichucho?
No. The, mochi.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, chicken yeah, yeah, heart on Tichucho mochi.
Yeah, we were, like, trying to do a chicken heart, like, mm-hmm. mochi, because, like, I wanted people to actually eat a heart within this kind of, like, gummy wrapper.
Yeah, but, like a meatball mochi like they do in Taiwan.
Yeah, it's kind of impossible to find a heart, like, on a day's notice, though, so.
Yeah, we called around to, like, butchers, and, like, every butcher in the Twin Cities.
Like, we went to United Noodle and then a bunch of other places, and then we went to this, just on the way to Connor's place to cook, we went to this own Mexican grocery store, and then, like, we were trying, like, do you have chicken hearts, or, like,
yeah,
and they're like, what, they're no? Like,
no, but we do the full gizzard, and we were like, okay, we'll go with that, and maybe there'll be some hearts in there. So you ordered, like, 24... full GI tract. No, we ordered the full GI tract.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There were throats in there.
And we kind of took apart, like, and just tried to get the livers out of it.
It was, like, 1 a.m, and we opened up this pack. It's just labeled pollo entero, which is, like, chicken entrails. We're like, all right, like, let's go.
And, like, we only needed, like, how many, like...
30? We only needed 24 livers. Yeah, so we each had a big thing of, like, chicken entrails in our fridge for a while after that. Honestly, this ash has just been sitting up there for a while. We should probably use it.
Yeah, it might go bad. All
right.
Why do you have a Tupperware full of ash?
Don't worry about it.
It's,
yeah, they're round.
And that's, like...
Wow.
You want this one?
This the final presentation? Could you explain what we're looking at a little bit?
Okay, so what I've done, so we have a kind of grayish black pasta, for the fire-roasted orchetti, with a just kind of basic red sauce with caramelized onions and garlic and fresh thyme over it. And then I've garnished it with some coconut ash that Evan and I made a while back. Giving it kind of like more of a charcoal appearance on the top. Hopefully kind of leaning into that kind of smokier vibe that we're going for this pasta.
You're very what?
I'm sufficiently tipsy.
Delicious, first of all, but I really think the ashes, I didn't know what to expect, but it really just like is smoky and different than anything I've had before.
They just don't do business.
This is what food does.
They do whatever you want. Yeah, so I'm doing mostly like
they're just
buyer behavior, like marketing stuff.
Two new friends.
Shouts out to food.
Shouts out to food. Yeah. It's just like some of them I'm not loving right now.
To find out about the next Kitsch event or to inquire about catering, check out Lavender Minneapolis on Facebook or Instagram.
Before you can cook anything, first, you need to buy the ingredients. For most of us, that just means swinging by the nearest grocery store and buying what's ever available. Now, some people are particularly eco-friendly or locally conscious, so they might go to a co-op or a farmer's market. But for some, not even that's enough. They want to get their hands dirty and grow their own food themselves. That means gardening. Now, gardening's hard enough if you have a lawn and seems downright impossible if you're like me and live in a big city. Luckily, community gardens have sprouted up between the concrete to provide renters like me a place to grow their own food. Ben Hallam has more.
God bless the grass that grows through the crack. They roll the concrete over it to try and keep it back. The concrete gets tired of what it has to do. It breaks and it buckles, and the grass grows through. And God bless the grass.
For over 10,000 years, human beings have been practicing agriculture, planting seeds, maintaining fields, and harvesting crops. But here in a city like Minneapolis, it can seem harder to continue in this tradition and to actually grow your own food. Fortunately, numerous community gardens exist, and they seek to make that task a little easier. I spoke to Abby Reynolds, the community garden manager for the Southeast Como Improvement Association, about one of these gardens, Fairshare Farm in Southeast Como.
So Fairshare Farm is actually somewhat of a unique community garden. I would say the base definition of a community garden is a community space where people can garden, is a place where someone has a plot to grow their own food as opposed to in their yard somewhere. So the reason that Fairshare Farm is pretty unique is that we don't have individual plots, we garden the whole thing as a community. So we really kind of are putting that community emphasis on community garden. So we have a lot of space in our garden where instead of people gardening their own section, we garden the whole thing different nights a week. So people choose, say, a Monday night to come with a couple of other people and garden at the same time and take care of the whole space. I would say community garden generally is somewhere that people are gonna grow food in community with each other, somewhere that's not necessarily in their own private property.
So could you talk a little bit about how Fairshare Farm came about in its current form?
Yeah, so Fairshare particularly came about because there was no food producing community garden space in Southeast Como, and the people who worked for Southeast Como at the time wanted to make the space a lot more community focused, so they strayed away a little more from that model of people having individual plots, because that meant people would come at kind of whatever time was useful to them, garden while they were there, and go home. And usually when that's the case, people don't always get to know the other folks gardening in the garden. They might a little bit, but not as much as they would if the whole thing was gardened as a community. And this model also can host more gardeners in one area. So for example, one of the community gardens I help with that runs on a more traditional model has maybe 16, 17 gardeners. With the Fairshare model, we have a similar amount of space, but we can accommodate about up to 30 gardeners, just because we have, we're not divvying up the space into individual plots. So in an area that has a very high student population and a high rental population, we wanted to make the space an area where people can come and be in community with each other. That's kind of the idea behind Fairshare Farm, and that's why the Southeast Como Improvement Association, SECIA for short, kind of put it together. And SECIA is one of many neighborhood associations across the Twin Cities that gets money from the city of Minneapolis to do community events and put on community programming such as community gardens.
What would you say draws people to community gardening?
I think community gardening is a great resource for anybody. It can be because you want to learn how to garden. It can be because you know how to garden and want to do it in community with other people. Or it could be just because you want to grow your own food and you don't necessarily have the space. So it can be for a number of reasons. Our garden tends to see a pretty good number of student gardeners, but also gardeners who live in the area long term.
Could you elaborate on how food and work gets distributed amongst various members of the community garden at Fairshare Farms?
So food distribution is pretty communal. We just have three garden sessions a week. Usually two are weekday nights and the other is a weekend morning, early afternoon type of time. And at each of those sessions, everybody does some weeding and watering and other chores, and then gets to harvesting vegetables, and then it kind of gets all laid out on a big table and everybody kind of just takes their portion. The whole Fair Share name kind of came from that a little bit. So everybody takes their share of the produce. The other thing that we do is we bring some to local seniors that are more homebound in the area. So we'll do deliveries like that.
How does decision-making work at the garden?
It's kind of by consensus. It's pretty democratic. I mean, we have enough space that people can say, I really want to grow this plant this year, can we do that? And usually the answer is yes. And we have several times per summer that we all get together in one big group to kind of talk over things and see how the sessions are going. And so usually it's kind of by consensus. So we'll have maybe 4 to 5 people there, say on a Saturday morning, and we'll be looking at maybe some space that we have left and say, well, what don't we have? What do people want more of? And what sort of seeds do we have? So we kind of just make a decision as a big group. And there's really enough space to do kind of everything that anybody wants to do, which is kind of cool.
If someone was interested in getting started community gardening, what would be your recommendations as to how to get involved?
So for Southeast Como specifically, we have a Facebook page. We have a link to our website. It's secomo.org/fairshare. But if you don't live in the Southeast Como neighborhood, there's plenty of community gardens all over the city that are great to get involved in. I know there's one here on West Bank. So if students live closer to the West Bank and want to get involved with the one here at the U, that one's a great one to get involved in. They're very active on Facebook, so it's a good one to look at. And then just check out your neighborhood. Even just going on Google Maps and searching community garden, a lot of times we'll pull something up for you. It just depends on the neighborhood. Community gardens are a great place to get to know people who live around you and care about the same things that you do, and you might learn a few new skills along the way. So it's a great way to get involved.
This summer, if you ever find yourself feeling the urge to get outside, to feel the dirt in your hands, to get more connected with the earth, just remember, you can do it right here in Minneapolis. All you have to do is head to your local community garden. For Real College Podcast, I'm Pat.
And after a while, it is growing everywhere. And God bless the ground.
That's all from Real College Podcast this week. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Ben Hallam, Liv Riggins, and as of this week, Nathan Fervoy. RCP's host and managing editor is yours truly, Alex Schumacher. You can find all of our episodes at RadioK.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you so much for listening, and be sure to tune in next time. Thank you.